It is Wednesday, the 12th of January. This is episode 73 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along. A new year. Happy New Year. I hope Santa brought all your gadgety goodies. I'm Chris and I am joined by Ian today.
Happy New Year.
Way.
I know you.
It feels a long time ago since New Year.
It's 2 weeks. And almost.
2 weeks. And nearly a week since I shoved off my flu.
You've been poorly. Episode.
I have.
Bless.
I know. Get the violins out.
Can you hear them?
But I... No.
Neither can I.
They're that small. But no, I am, although I may break down into a coughing fit, which I'll have to excuse myself for now. I'm all right other than that.
But it's good to be back.
Yeah. And we've got lots and lots of goodies to get through today. Because it's been, firstly, a long time. Ian's obviously had a typing memorandum that he needs to type at least 1,000 words a day.
I was just about to say 1,000 words a day. How spooky.
And Microsoft, they had the CES down in Las Vegas, which is obviously a big news pot for tech at the beginning of the year. So I think we should crack on.
Yes.
So let's start with the Microsoft announcements from CES, which...
What announcements?
Exactly. Well, I don't know why we're starting with them because, quite frankly, it was a little bit of a flop. I think a lot of a flop. I mean, you can't even bullet point what came out of it because they pretty much said we sold a lot of Kinect.
But I did.
Yeah, you did in your 1,000. they sold 8 million Kinects, which is actually exceptionally good. Beats the 5 million that they were saying, which everyone said, no way you're going to sell that many. So good for them.
I mean, it's scary to think that's like a peripheral as well. I mean, there's that many peripherals sold. It's amazing.
They would never have sold that many had they actually been on the normal schedule for new consoles.
No.
I think that's why they've sold. But they've sold them all, and there's going to be a lot of games sold off the back of it, I'm sure.
Yes.
So basically, that was the news, that they'd sold a lot. The rest was just all guff, as far as I could tell. They're doing some avatar chatting via the Kinect. Kinect can now follow your facial features. But what else did they cover? I think you grabbed a few more points out.
Yeah, Windows 7 phone. And it had a terrible woman doing 7 best points of Windows 7 phone. And it was just truly, she was just truly awful. She was like a Barbie on speed. It was just the worst thing ever. And I still think that product's got some good ideas. I still like the tiles at the front. I know that's each to their own and people won't like it. The only thing is that they still won't commit to sales figures. Prior to Christmas, they said they'd sold 1.5 million Phone 7 handsets in 6 weeks. But that's to the sales channels.
Yeah, so they sold it to the shops. The shops have not necessarily sold them on.
No, which is a bit of a con. They've only got 5,500 apps, which isn't a great amount. But then they've got a new...
It depends whether they're the quality apps, to be honest, though.
And Flickr and Kindle are coming. And the Flickr app looked really good. It looked better than the iOS app. So whether that's due to the tie with Yahoo... Who knows? They then moved on to Windows 7, said it was doing great. IE9 looks a great upgrade. They actually had some interest in hardware, but they had some interest in hardware last year, which we never saw again.
Yeah, a lot of it was vaporware last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, well, how's your Windows slate coming along? But they had there was a couple of really mental designs. There was Acer with their 2 14-inch touchscreens and one laptop device.
Yeah, It was a clamshell, wasn't it, with the lower touchscreen turning into the keyboard. I like the idea of it, although I don't see much use for it. It's snazzy.
It was very snazzy. I quite like the Samsung had a slider as well. And
Samsung came up with a lot of very, very good-looking pieces of hardware at this show. I think I'll come on to one of those a bit later, but yeah, it was, Samsung had a good one. And that's so basically it was a tablet that the top slides up. We've seen it before, kind of thing, where it slides up and actually turns into a kind of clamshell.
Yep, and there was an Asus tablet as well, which was touch and stylus, and wireless keyboard. It was an i5 chip, and that is definitely coming March, allegedly, honest.
And that's taking some cues from that kind of slate device that Microsoft were touting last year. So there's some apps there that use the stylus for making notes on stuff you've chopped out of websites and things.
Yep.
So could be interesting to keep an eye on. I think that was totally usurped by the Zoom, but I think we'll come on to that later.
Yes.
So Microsoft's also, they're still pushing on with their Surface device. Surface is like a massive touchscreen thing that they've been touting for years, that you can interact with devices and it can show, I think they're trying to market it at things like having it in pub tables and stuff like that, or in
stores,
in businesses rather, yeah, in stores, yep, rather than actually, it's nothing home use, but it does now look, well, it's always looked impressive.
And it looks even more so now, because previously it was a big table. And there was a big thing under it, like a big curtain around it.
It had a big projector, yeah, underneath.
But now they're saying every pixel is an infrared camera, and it's only 4 inches thin.
So that suddenly becomes viable to put into worktops and things.
$7,500.
And the price, I think, has remained about that for a while now. So, but I have never seen, always seen the Microsoft developing it, never seen anyone having used it in the real world or any real world application for it. So we will see. But some of the demos they show are amazing. So could be another sleeper hit once it, you know, if it does hit stores. Look, it would look good in the Apple store.
What with the blue screen of death?
And so they announced that Windows will support Intel, AMD, and ARM going forward.
I think that's massive. That is
so it's not
massive.
Yes. ARM certainly, I think their stock improved a great deal. ARM are the power behind a lot of mobile chips, and even it's the architecture for the Apple A4 chip, I think, is ARM based.
Yeah, but I think also the whole thing seemed to be that Windows had won through all the different cloud arguments. It just, Microsoft basically said at this show, if you want something, Windows will be on it. I think that was my takeaway from it. And I've ripped off two quotes, which summed up CES, and I wish I'd got actually where the quote came from. But the two big deals: the abandonment of Windows exclusivity by practically all of Microsoft's OEM customers. And I think we saw that there was a lot of movement onto Android and other platforms. It's no longer just Microsoft. It's not just longer Windows. And also from Microsoft's point of view, the abandonment of Intel exclusivity by Microsoft for the next generation of Windows. Which is a sea change.
Well, they've been hand in hand partners for a long while now.
Yes.
Yes.
But apart from that, it was rubbish.
So, yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about what they said, but I guess at CES you just expect some sexy hardware and some really big announcements. You expect them to give it a good old bash, and it just felt a little bit boring.
Yeah, certainly from Microsoft.
Yes, we've been saying that.
Certainly from Microsoft. I mean, last year they had Slate and they talked about Courier, and there seemed to be a real buzz about the place. Windows 7 had just come out and it was getting a lot of traction.
Well, then they were building up Kinect as well, weren't
they? Yeah, and it just seemed like, oh, really exciting things. And this year just seemed almost a bit of a retreat to say we're the big old horse that's, you know, always reliable, always there, and we've got some
problem
nice
is
new things.
Yeah, some of these up-and-coming Japanese and Chinese firms are coming up with some truly incredible stuff.
So we'll crack on with the Zoom. That looked amazing.
One of the stars of the show, I think, according to everyone who saw it. So this is a 10-inch proper widescreen tablet, basically running the new Honeycomb Android 3. And it does look incredibly sexy.
Yep.
So it's... Say, I guess it's the same kind of thickness as an iPad, but black and sleek rather than silvery.
Yep, and I think as well, I mean, a better resolution on the screen, 1280 by 800. It has a camera.
So it is sort of movie widescreen format, basically.
Yep. It's 720p video record, 1080p video playback. It's got all your usual connectivity. And I think what one of the little nuggets for me was 32 gig of onboard storage. So it was coming with plenty of actual storage. A lot of the times you see iPad competitors were always maybe less storage than the actual iPad offered. Yeah. And the battery is allegedly supporting 10 hours of video. And if that is true, that's awesome.
And I think you've said before that actually you wouldn't choose having the top rated. You would have 32 gig on your iPad if you had a choice again. So it sounds like about the right.
So this year when the 128 gig iPads come out, and I've already said I'm not going to buy it, but stop me.
Also got a dual core processor in there, so got some oomph behind it as well.
What did you think of the Honeycomb video?
very, very un-Android, you know, you very un-phone-like, very, very tablet-focused. I wonder how that's, whether they're going to have a branch here. Is Honeycomb on going to be on phones as well, or
no,
is it just for the tablet?
I think it's tablet only. They're talking about ice.
Another branch.
They're talking about ice cream as the next update for Android for
it's,
phones.
It's, I think it's ice cream sandwich. That could have been a joke. I don't know. I didn't realize. Someone said, or I heard that it goes in alphabetical order, and I've not noticed yet.
No, it does.
Yeah, I've not noticed that. Yeah. So we had gingerbread, then now everyone's speculating ice cream.
No, it's, oh, it was gingerbread, honeycomb, ice cream.
Yeah, I missed the letter out because I'm illiterate. HP have said they're no tablet yet.
February.
But HP... Okay, so an HP are going to, this is going to be a WebOS platform.
Yes.
Is that right? Is it?
Yes. So I think there's a lot of excitement around what the potential is, because they were the ones behind the Slate. So they were supposedly partnering with Microsoft to launch the Slate device last year.
So they probably moved down some of the hardware route, even if they now completely changed the software.
Yes. But I think that's got a lot of potential.
So that's an announcement we'll have to wait for. And WebOS was sort of absent, really, from what I've seen of CES.
Oh,
so it's going to be interesting to see what they actually come out with. The Acer C-Pad, I don't know much about that.
It was a tablet that? With the, remember we talked earlier on about the Courier device from last year, very similar to that kind of Courier device. It's a single tablet.
Ah, yes.
But it seemed to be more focused on taking notes, and I think there is a market for that. You know, one of the things I struggle with in iPad, some of the apps that have come out, if you type your notes, it's fine, but some of them are looking to you, you know, they'll give you almost like a to-do page as a template, and you can't type, they want you to write. And if you write with a stylus and iPad, it's big letters. It doesn't work. You know, it's just impractical for me.
Right.
So something more focused, I think, has got potential.
BlackBerry's Playbook was in evidence, and a little bit more a little bit less vaporware, should I say, than it was the first time we saw it.
I mean, some of the people that actually saw it were amazed at the performance. You know, it was running.
It does look
running an HD video and multitasking in the background was quick. You know, so you're looking at actually a very capable, you know, device. But strangely,
but you need your phone to hook it up to and actually get connectivity to wireless, I guess.
Which is just a bit odd. But
it is, but it's very strange.
Yes,
because there's going to be plenty of people that would buy it who don't have a phone from you. So you're kind of limiting that. Maybe, you know, they're marketing at. This is, you know, is our offering. You need our phone to do it. But I think that's probably going to cut some of their sales anyway.
But I think if you're a BlackBerry user, it's probably Nirvana. It's probably ideal.
And there's plenty of BlackBerry users out there.
Fools.
yes, so 3D TVs was still massively in evidence. People showing off glasses-free 3D. That's not easy to say. But they're also now touting and they're trying to chuck 3D cameras at us to go with their 3D
TVs. I think it's just, I don't think 3D TVs have been as successful as they hoped. I don't think the content's there, you know, so there's probably a reluctance from people to buy it because the content's not there. But if you have 3D cameras then and 3D video recorders, then who knows?
And 3D consoles, you know.
Yes.
It's all those things. It's 3D on a TV is going to turn into a feature that they will just shove in, but in due course.
Yeah, and
I don't think it's sold the TVs off the back of it that they want it to, and they're still pushing it. It will just become part of the norm. And if you've got it, then you might buy some 3D content somewhere along the way. I don't think it's not like your HD. It's not going to sell that many TVs, but it's still going to be part of the norm. We saw Motorola had an amazing CES, and they showed the what's it called? I can't remember the name.
Atrix 4G.
That's the one.
Thanks.
So that was that's right. That was a dual core. I've got my cursor right now. That was a dual core handset running rocket fast, and fast enough that it could plug into an accessory, which is effectively a netbook, and run it as a laptop.
Which I just thought was a really, really clever idea.
It might not be practical for anyone. It's probably never going to really be used in the real world, but it shows an idea there, which is having a module which you can take around and plug into different screens and different form factors.
Absolutely. If I take my example just now, I've got my iPhone with a fast chip, my iPad with a fast chip, I'm paying twice for it. Why can't I just buy a really fast phone that's always mobile? And when I do need a keyboard and screen, I just plug it into that.
And I tell you, I did actually start writing an article on this basis, which I think this is the direction that things are going. So this maybe starts this process off. Mobile devices are now small enough and fast enough to become practical like that, to plug into accessories. You know, you might go to work and plug it into your big screen, whereas when you're on the train, you have it on a small screen, and maybe if you're at home, you plug it into your medium-sized screen. So, and I think this shows that it's possible, because it's also it also has different operating systems based on what it's being plugged into. So it's defining how you use the device as well by what it's being plugged into. It's a very clever idea.
It almost feels wrong calling them a phone.
It's an ultra portable computer.
Yep, the phone's the 5% of what I use my phone for now. Probably even less than that.
And we've got, so it's a dual core processor, and in due course we'll be getting jumps and leaps in that kind of ultra small arena. So yeah, an interesting direction. Maybe we're going to see that. And it was part of Motorola's generally good time at CES. Everyone was taken aback with what they were doing. I just want to mention the Samsung 9 series laptop, which everyone who saw it at the show thought it was absolutely gorgeous. It's razor thin and sort of outdoes Apple in Appleness. and it apparently is just very nice. I'd love to see one in the flesh based on the reactions gorgeous. That it's been getting.
I mean, that's sort of matte. I think it was a kind of matte black, wasn't it? Or a kind of steel color?
It's kind of a black steel brushed finish.
It looked amazing.
Anyway, it's just incredibly sleek and curvy. So, and Samsung, their stall, from what you could see, was incredibly good looking gadget. So they've clearly got on board with the design side of gadgets, which is great to see. But you made the comment that actually Apple again did sneak in their big headlines during the event.
Every year this happens. I mean, last year was iPad. It was the first year they did the iPhone announcement. It just totally overtook CES. And this year, I don't think there was one maybe standout. There was a Mac App Store launching. There was a whole lot of iPad 2 rumors. So I think every tablet launch was almost tarnished with but it has to compete against iPad 2. Almost every commentary you read had that as a byline somewhere.
Now, I didn't follow along live with CES because I was recovering. But having said that, I would say this year they didn't attack CES as much as they normally would.
No, really. But then...
So they're definitely not in as much evidence.
During CES, was a whole lot of rumours about Verizon. And then just at the tail end of last week, all the invites came out. So if you look at a lot of the tech reporting, it was almost like a nod and a wink. Yeah, but we know iPhone's coming to Verizon. And that's a game changer. And yet again, they just seemed to...
They have been saying that for about 10 million months now.
Yeah, but it's happened. It's happened.
Yes, it has. I think we're going to talk about
it. And it's
that
just
later.
Bizarre that they get so much press from not being at the show. Probably...
Why would they bother?
Exactly. I mean, they keep on talking. I mean, the guy that runs it keeps on saying Apple will be here next year and we're hoping to attract them. And why would they?
Why would you do it? And one of the things that you hear every single year at CES is, oh, I wonder what Apple's going to do, even though they're not there.
But also, why would they?
It's clever.
Why would they go and compete with, everybody else, where they can have their own event in 6 weeks' time where everybody will report them for that day?
Yeah. So that was CES.
One more thing.
I think a very good
thing. Star Wars and Blu-ray this September. Fantastic.
And then Star Wars in 3D in October.
Well, you've got to keep the Lucas family going.
And then probably the extended edition. And then next year, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, yes.
Anyway.
Another Star Wars has been released. So we're going to continue our story on now with net neutrality, because I think we've covered this briefly before, but BT have come out and said that so this is BT, the broadband wholesaler we're talking about here, not just the phone company. This is the people who sell on the broadband network effectively. Now they're coming and saying they are happy to effectively charge differently. Help me out here. You're probably better explain it.
Oh, so you've just given up?
Yeah, I've given up.
They launched a new service called Content Connect, which is basically allowing ISPs to store video on their own network closer to the user, as opposed to using maybe third-party companies, which everybody can use. For example, there's Akamai, don't know how to pronounce it properly.
I think it's Akamai.
Yeah, thanks for that. And they are delivering BBC iPlayer. BBC's iPlayer service. So BBC
Akamai are a massive content delivery network. And the biggest that's
Apple basically. Were using them to stream live events, and a lot of people use them to stream live events. It can take massive bandwidth. But what Beauty are doing is basically saying ISPs or content providers, you can use this Content Connect service, and it will deliver your content faster. Now,
so it's effectively a caching service that they're then selling on.
Yes. So straight away, you know, people are saying, well, this is the start of a two-tier internet. This is the certain people can pay to have, you know, a better service or deliver a better service. BT deny this, of course, because it is a very, very emotive subject. And certainly it's one that people want to regulate. You know, so they're looking for government regulation to stop this from happening. So BT said it supports the concept of net neutrality, but believes ISP should be free to charge content owners for a higher quality delivery service.
Which goes against net neutrality, is ridiculous to say that in one breath.
So TalkTalk have openly expressed a willingness to charge content companies for better delivery of their video to the nation's homes. And Virgin Media, it's managing time-sensitive traffic at peak times, but it's not prioritising. So although it's saying...
Yeah, we've said that we don't mind... I don't mind managing their network.
So I'm quite happy if they say that we want VoIP and we want video and we want web and we want gaming, and we're happy to prioritise those as key services at the expense of if somebody's downloading news groups or if somebody's torrenting, that has to drop. And I'm quite fine with that. What I'm not fine is if they turn around and said, well, we're quite happy for our own video service to be prioritised, but if you want to watch iPlayer, no luck, we're only going to give you 100k for that.
Yeah,
and that's an issue for me.
Absolutely, for me as well. It shouldn't be up to the delivery people to define what you can see. And it can get to... taking things to their logical extremes, it will get to that point where it will be up to your delivery. So the pipe will decide what you can and cannot watch.
So if I'm
on, that's not the job of a pipe.
And the fear is if I'm on Sky Broadband, then I will, I can watch from Sky Player at a good speed, and I can't watch from iPlayer, or I can watch Sky One traffic at a good speed, and I can't watch BBC traffic at a good speed.
As soon as you give Rupert Murdoch the opportunity to screw over everyone else except for his own companies, he will do it.
Yep.
So there you go. And so
well done.
Believe us when we say this is a bad
well
thing.
Well done, BT.
Yes, Cock. Well done, BT. And well done the government for being morally superior and proposing that they block all porn.
I thought these right-wing Tories, when they came in, were all about less legislation. And more about openness and the ability of people to work out themselves and stop.
As long as they're not showing a bit of thigh while they're doing it.
Stop these socialist workers from controlling us. What a load of.
Anyway, so that basically the story is that the government have said that they would quite like porn to be an opt-in service.
Yes.
So that parents can have the opportunity to block off any unsavory, unchild-friendly websites, which, is as a proposal, is probably the wrong way around in some ways. You should probably get parents who are particularly concerned to buy into a service that does do this, and be safe, rather than having to, having the embarrassing phone call of, can you make porn come on my broadband, please? Basically,
can you make porn come on my broadband? Could you not have chosen better words for that?
I'm quoting Alan Partridge.
You looked like him as well just when you did it. It's quite impressive.
I don't deny that there is a definite call to have some sort of service where there are parental lock services, which block out most content, which people can subscribe to.
If you're using M3, if you go to what they class an adult site, you actually have to get a PIN number and register and do all that nonsense. So for mobile providers are already doing this.
There are going to be massive headaches, especially if you do it from this stance of block everything and let people through who ask. I think something has to be done. There's a big part of me which thinks that it's not a bad idea in some respect. I just don't think, say, this block all mentality is good, because it will get piggybacked by the music industry and the film industry getting sites blocked through a national firewall or whatever, however they end up putting it in. It becomes censorship in some ways as well.
And that's my fear. It won't just be pornography, or they'll find some way of classifying certain sites as being adult material. You know, because they're hosting a certain piece of content, so you'll find a whole swathe of the internet being blocked unless you apply for this. And how do you know it's not? You know, it then gets into a grey area about how do you know what's been blocked? Flickr would be blocked because of the images it hosts.
Yes,
you know, and it's crazy.
It's also a bit naive, I think, to think that having just an on-off switch is what's needed.
No.
I mean,
and the thing that's think
not. Not all dads don't want to see it.
And it's nothing to do with dads either. But the thing is, if somebody's determined enough, this won't stop them.
Unlikely. So, hey, businesses out there, why not set up an internet service provider that, you know, does block those kind of sites, sell it as a family-friendly provider, and you'll probably get a lot of sales from it.
Oh, cha-ching.
Yeah, well, there's an idea in there somewhere, for sure. T-Mobile, right? So they came out, and via a text message they sent to all their existing users, saying, you know how you are paying for 3 gigabyte, well, actually unlimited usage, but with a fair usage limit of about 3 gigabytes for your data, mobile data. Well, we've decided that's too generous. We're going to chop that to 500. And of course, T-Mobile users were extremely aggravated by this. And I think this story's been breaking all day, hasn't it, basically?
Yes.
I guess they've been inundated with the complaints and moans, and it's certainly been alive on Twitter and around the internet. So much so that T-Mobile have had to back out of it. They've done a big U-turn. They're now saying that existing users can keep their 3 gig limit, yet new customers will be faced with a new 500 meg. Limit. It just seems that they're selling you mobile data, and now they're taking away all data. I mean, that all the mobile companies are doing it now. I don't know whether that's literally because their networks can't cope, or and they're having to do it to manage that, or something, you know, they're just revising for other reasons. I'm not sure.
And it's hard to say without having the data behind it. It's hard for us on outside to know. I mean, certainly when you look at the I know other networks have done the same and cut back, and they've quoted stories of how it's been a very small percentage, 0.2, 0.3% of users that are using up, you know, 80% of bandwidth. You know, examples of people getting unlimited data on their mobile phone and torrenting via it, you know, via the connection. And you just think,
well, that seems ridiculous.
Yeah, and you just think, why? You know, but it's on and they're paying for it, and they think, why not?
It's the kind of same arguments we used to have over just standard broadband.
Oh, yeah.
And they have sorted that out.
Yep.
They have, I guess, as they've increased their volumes and production, you know, their network, it's got better. So maybe this is a time thing.
But they started calling it like the mobile internet. And the mobile internet includes web browsing. That was what T-Mobile were saying. The mobile internet includes web browsing, includes email, doesn't include watching video. That's not the mobile internet. That's what
the mobile internet's whatever we define.
That's what your home broadband's for. You're not allowed to watch video. But I'm sure at one point they were selling some video services. Pay some extra money and watch some Premiership goals.
Yeah, it's backtracking. And I would imagine it's because they can't cope with the volume of data if they let you have. If they let you just go at it free reign. And I guess that's the underlying thing. But I wish they'd say that. Rather than just chop. Anyway, they've backtracked now for existing customers, but new customers will only get. It doesn't seem very much. It's that it's not even very much YouTube watching if you do want to watch a YouTube video.
It's one magazine and an iPad. You know, if you don't, and I know you can't,
and that's you done for the month.
Yep, yeah, and I know they're limited, so you can't do it. You know, can't go over a certain amount on iPads and iPhones. I think they've got the agreements in place. So if you want to go over 20 meg or something like that, you need to use Wi-Fi. But you know, if for whatever reason you did manage to do it, I mean, you know, like the last Wired magazine was 520 meg. One magazine. Yeah.
They're going to have to move into the new arena sooner or later.
Yes,
I mean, we'll see. But anyway. It's a worrying trend that they're backtracking that much so soon. Okay, let's move on to some quickies. Google, we always like what Google are doing. Well, we don't always like what Google are doing, but one thing really? We did like was they sent a little. they sent a little Google man up into. In fact, an Android mascot, isn't he? I don't know what his name is. Does he have a name?
Android.
Is he called Android?
I have no idea. I'm just making up.
So they sent him into space anyway.
It was very cool.
They took a video of it on an Nexus S.
Yep.
And have a look at... Oh, that's a rubbishy link. I'm not going to say that. Have a look at our show notes and you'll find a link to where you can find this video.
But I want to buy a balloon and do it myself.
There's plenty of videos on the YouTube of other people having done it with little toys and stuff. So, yeah. He fell off, unfortunately. He skydived probably to his death.
But they also used it. They also did a whole lot of crazy experiments to verify all their GPS stuff and all their different settings on the phone as well. So all right, very okay. Interesting.
So they actually used it as an experiment.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, they sent him up on a weather balloon,
yep.
On a little polystyrene platform. It was very cute, and the pictures are from the if you watched it in high def, were awesome.
I know. And really, that's really why I want to do it myself. It's like that looks.
You've got to risk a phone though. Google can risk a phone. They're pretty rich.
And so can Digital Outbox.
It's a business expense, isn't it?
Dear Mr. Taxman. But we're not a business.
Another cool, funky thing. Google Goggles. I think this is your story. You take this
I love
one.
This. Google Goggles was updated yesterday, or the day before, and it solves Sudoku puzzles. So my demo at work yesterday... and it's a really expensive demo, was to take the iPad and randomly search online for a Sudoku puzzle, take the iPhone, take a picture, send it to Google, and let it solve it for me. And
it does.
It does. It works really well. Everybody was jaw-dropped. And then I had to confess that was £1,300 I'd spent just to show them that demo. But I just think fantastic. Fantastic. Well done, Google.
Very clever. So basically, just scans the grid, scans the numbers, and actually solves it. It's very clever. Anyway, good stuff. Love it. However, they're not doing so well. Google aren't doing so well in the TV arena.
Well, did you see many Google TVs at CES?
I saw none.
Interesting.
Whether there were any, I don't know. I didn't saw...
Just before Christmas.
Why is that?
Just before Christmas, they basically asked that TV manufacturers don't demo Google TV in its current state at CES. Sales have been pretty poor. Certainly on some of the worst of the year lists that some of the main tech journalists put out, Google TV was up there as being one of the worst products reviewed that year.
Well, they got screwed over as well by content providers. It's not up to the TV manufacturers. Whether it's a bad product anyway, I don't know, but they got screwed by content providers.
I think there's two issues. One's usability. It still feels like a computer running on your TV. And for this to work, it can't feel like that. It's got to be easy to use. It's got to be, you know, a remote can use it. None of this keyboard and mouse nonsense that they said had to drive it. I think that just tells you it's not the right product. And as you said, you know, Hulu, Fox, a whole lot of others just said, hold on, I'm blocking you. I'm not comfortable with this content being available via your service.
Even though you can see it any other way else, which is, it's content providers are asses. But anyway, so that didn't go down very well.
No.
We've also had Skype have announced a new version of their software. This is, I believe, working on iOS devices, and it's got video working over Wi-Fi and also 3G. So that kind of betters FaceTime, in that FaceTime is only Wi-Fi at the moment.
Yep. We give it a try. It seemed to work with about a 1 to 2 second lag. But if you really do need to make that video call... And you're not within Wi-Fi, it's fantastic. And the fact it's free, because originally they said we're going to bring it out, but we'll charge for it. And they've also seen a massive upsurge in people downloading the client and usage.
Which I'm sure T-Mobile are very happy about.
Oh, I'm sure everybody's happy about.
So yes. Anyway, good news. Another string to their bow. Good stuff. Now, we've had Nintendo come out. Nintendo's big thing at the moment is their 3DS.
Their only thing.
Okay, they're their only thing, because they won't announce a new console yet. But the 3DS, so a 3D handheld that you can view without glasses. But they have come out now and said that children shouldn't really use it, because they could be harmed by it.
Children under six, potentially it's damaging the growth of their eyes.
Wow.
Which is, but seemingly Sony have already said the same about their TVs, as has Panasonic, oh sorry, Toshiba. Parents should keep an eye on children watching its TVs that display 3D images without needing glasses.
It's for something they're pushing so much, it feels a bit like cigarettes, you know?
Yeah. The companies have also warned that watching too much 3D content can cause adults discomfort.
And discomfort normally means something's not quite right.
And especially for me, I'm sensitive for migraines and stuff. So any discomfort, you know, see if my arm's not feeling too comfortable, I can move it. See if my eyes start to get discomfort, I get a migraine. I start getting sick.
Harder to rest your eyes, isn't it? Yes. So anyway, an interesting announcement to come out, and Gabe, ratified by Sony as well. So yeah, pretty much don't watch 3D, even though we're pushing it so much, because it's bad for you.
Yeah.
But they did announce, they did show off actually their 3DS, and everyone again said how amazing it is to look at.
And so it's out soon. It's next month in Japan and March in UK. So very, very soon.
But it's going to cost £200.
£200.
Which is the cost of a full Xbox 360.
Yep. Also, it's region locked. So for those importers that are still amongst us, that's a bit of an issue.
And games, £30 to £50. It's ridiculous.
They
haven't learned anything.
No. Look at Apple. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. When you buy a big console game and your big HD console for your big TV, I guess we still accept the price of, you know, between 30 and 40, well, £40 basically.
Yep. And but, look at the price of things like Xbox Live Arcade and you know, some of the smaller games in PS3.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, phones have changed everything, and that kind of just completely ignores, this whole new area of mobile gaming, which is the biggest growth area.
Mm.
Maybe even the biggest area at the moment. I don't know what the figures are. Anyway, so I can't see how anyone would pay that much for a game anymore. But
are you interested in buying one?
No, not at all.
Neither am I. I'm
interested in seeing one, and there's a very big difference.
It takes zero interest for me.
Gadgety people and tech journalists are going to love it and hold it and think how fabulous it is, but none of them are going to buy it.
No.
And that's the problem with it. It's a good bit of kit, just not at that price. In a move that I found quite surprising, in collaboration with Microsoft, I believe, PrimeSense, who are the company responsible for putting the Kinect camera system together, have released official open source drivers for the Kinect.
Woohoo!
Which I just didn't see that happening, to be honest. Because
especially as Microsoft at the start were saying, we don't want people hacking it. Stop hacking it.
I'm not surprised they didn't want it as well, because effectively it's a bit of hardware that no one's really done before. And to give people free access to it seems very generous. But still, they've done it. And I'm sure we're going to see some... Well, we've already seen some great mashups. So I'm sure we're going to see even more.
There was rumours at CES that they're actually going to bring it out officially for Windows.
I don't know what you'd use it for.
Well, I think people have hacked it so you can play World of Warcraft with it.
Okay. The first thing that happens, World of Warcraft, which sold Cataclysm. I think they sold some like 4.8 million copies in the first week or something stupid. Bonkers amounts of...
But if you see some of the videos that people have put on YouTube and you see that kind of 3D depth to the video, there's actually a free app it's in the Mac App Store that you can plug the camera in and it will show you what the camera can see. And it's very cool. Not that I've got it, but when you see the videos, what people are looking at, it looks amazing.
There you go. Cannibal, which is a game you've pushed massively on the iPhone.
I love it.
They've released their game as open source, so you can go and see how they put it together.
Yep, Henry would have been podcasting tonight, but he's hacking the Cannibal source. The developers were taking part in a promotion before Christmas called the Indie Game Sale. So there's a number of different games getting sold for less the price, and B, all the developers are committed to, I think it was passing on 30% of the sales during that period for charity. So they raised $25,000, which is not an inconsiderable amount. And as part of that, the developers decided that they would release Cannibal as open source.
There you go.
So they took the latest. So it's not some old version from a year ago. They've taken the latest version of the game. They've taken out their high score and Twitter backend support, mostly because they don't want some of the reverse engineering starting to hack their backends. So
no, they don't want people getting into their databases and shoving things around. So it's fair and understandable.
And they're happy to use it for whatever you want, even for commercial stuff. But they don't want to do support with it. But however, any specific game code, art, animation, music, sound effects, they're all proprietary. It's more the kind of game engine they're quite happy to see other people take and do their own things with.
And I guess if you're a new developer and want to see how the real guys do it, I imagine as much as anything, it's likely to put off a new developer because it's probably pretty damn complicated.
Yeah, but it just gives you such a massive insight. You can download it from GitHub, install it on your Mac and crack on, and it is very, very nice. Just to be able to see how it all was put together. And they freely admit that was their first app. So Rough Edges.
Yeah, but a developer's always going to say that just because... Because they're proud of what they do, generally.
Yep.
They don't want other people criticizing it. Kindle 3, Amazon's best-selling product ever. I think that's been around for a little while now, you know. But I guess it's now all official that it's even outsold things like Harry Potter.
Harry Potter 7 was Amazon's biggest-selling product that they've ever stocked. And they're now saying that the Kindle 3 is beating that. And their guesstimate is 8 million. And I wouldn't surprise me because the amount of people at work that have been buying it for their dads or their wives or their
siblings. It's such a simple gift purchase. It's the right arena. It's the right thing. And if you're a bookie, it's a perfect device.
Two scary stories. But one of the chaps I know at work, he bought it for his dad. He couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work. And it had endless problems with the support, Amazon support, which I'm surprised at because I've had so many good stories about Amazon support. Ultimately, the guy telling him, because your Wi-Fi doesn't work, head to McDonald's and test it there. and he thought that was maybe just a guy trying to be helpful. But I found there's somebody else at work who got the same advice. maybe just by chance, it's the same person thinking, I know what to do, send it to McDonald's to test it. But...
that famous cloud venue.
I just hope that's not the... Maybe they've got a tie-in with McDonald's. Maybe they've got a deal.
Maybe they have, yeah. There you go. Brilliant. Love it. Okay, we have had Amazon announce an app store. Everyone's doing app stores, although we're not allowed to call them app stores. We'll talk about that later.
Apart from Apple.
So Amazon are releasing what's going to be, to start with, I believe, an Android app store.
Yes.
Other than complicating things further in the Android marketplace, what it means is you've got the official Android app store, but the Amazon store will hope to almost put a bit more of an Apple stance on it. So it'll vet the things that are going in it and check them through for their suitability. But a benefit for a developer putting their apps into this store is that obviously you get one-click access to all the Amazon customers, which are not an inconsiderable number.
Nope, and all that one-click purchase is very similar to the App Store on the iPhone. Partly, I must admit to being confused because I'm so used to the iOS way of just, I've got an App Store and you just go to one place and it's all there.
Yeah.
And I just don't see, is this going to be fragmented or is it going to mean Amazon ultimately wins just because of its name?
And maybe... That's the benefit of an open system. The best app store will win the day.
Yep, and I mean certainly you can't. I mean the name behind it is massive. You know, to be trading an app on Amazon is big deal.
I mean, Amazon now are far far more than just their own store. They are a full. They're an eBay seller kind of product in the background. But also with all their Kindle stuff and their WhisperNet syncing, their one-click purchases are well up and running.
And don't forget all the developer, you know, cloud support in the background. It's massive.
Exactly. It's
massive.
It's ginormous. I mean, massive organizations now sit all their infrastructure on Amazon's web services.
But
so it's just, it's not what we expect it to be anymore. So it's an amazing company.
What's interesting for me as well is that it's not an android.amazon.com, it's a developer.amazon.com you register at. And they're looking for mobile application developers, Android developers in particular, to join.
So in particular, meaning that it's going to be open to other platforms going forward.
You know, so could ultimately they launch a Mac or a Windows App Store at some point in the future?
Yeah, because there's nothing to stop them putting it on the Macintosh computer.
Nope.
There is stuff to stop them putting it on the iPhone, though.
Yes.
Well, talking of the Mac App Store, the Apple have released one.
Finally.
As a kind of an update to your operating system. We say finally, and up it pops, and effectively you just get to download direct to your computer, basically.
Yep, and I've made the application installation a lot simpler. I mean, previously, if you're a Mac user, you'll get a DMG file or a zip file that you're unpackaging, get a DMG and install from there. Or drag it to your
Linux, Unix type.
Yeah, and you would drag it to your... And I think that step, although it's simple... I think everybody I know that since I've went to a Mac has just found out a bit, what do I do? How do I install?
It's basically a security feature, isn't it? But it feels a bit strange that you double click on something and then have to drag something somewhere.
Yes. And now with the App Store, you fire up the App Store, you click buy, and a little animation appears. It flows down to your dock and it installs.
Yeah, and away you go. So I like probably everyone else, downloaded Tweety 2,
yes.
The official Twitter client. I think, didn't they, there's a figure here somewhere in these notes saying something like of the million, however many App Store downloads, like 900,000 of them were this Tweety 2.
I made that up.
Oh, okay. Damn it. That's how rumors start, boy.
Exactly. You heard it here first.
But anyway, you are probably more than right that yes, nearly all of them were, because it's free. Everyone wants to try out this App Store. Same with all the free stuff. You know, they're going to see a massive increase just because people wanted to try it out.
Yeah. But there's a couple of, I think there's, everybody's worried about price. I think for the older Mac developers, there was certainly a bit of consternation around how should the price, to sell? Or should the price, as they always have, because that's how much their apps cost, and that's what their model tells them they should be pricing it at.
Their model based on the number of sales that they thought they were going to get, basically.
Yeah. Now, we've seen quite a lot of the developers just sticking to the same price, and also seeing a good increase in sales. We've seen a couple other developers actually price differently. So, for example, RealMac, which is a UK-based company, they... 2 or 3 days before, put out that Rapid Weaver, which is their web development app, was basically halving in price. Courier, which was an app that they'd written very recently, which is used to upload content to Flickr, Facebook, etc. Instead of being $25, it was $5. So only $2.99. So very, very much a price similar to what you'd see on a mobile device.
Yep.
And their sales since then have been great. You know, they're really, really pleased with their sales. We've also seen Apple set a bit of an agenda. Aperture, which is their Lightroom equivalent, you know, so almost like the kind of the semi-pro photographer's application. It's £173 box. So if you went into an actual physical Apple store, it's £173. If you buy it from apple.com, it's £173. Buy it from the App Store, it's $44.99.
Yeah, but you could understand it more if they just lowered the box price, but then I guess they're not going to. They want people to use it via the App Store.
Yep. And the little byproduct to that is that you've got, in America, it's $199 and $79 in the App Store. So why the hell is the Apple TV $99 in America and £101 here?
Yes.
I don't get that.
It's because they know that they can charge that much, basically.
No, No. Remember, Steve says we've got to educate ourselves about the tax system. So Educate me, Steve, honestly.
Basically, well, they kind of sell things in the UK knowing that you can't import them because we've got stupid import taxes and all that. Anyway.
Well, there's a way. There's a way.
There's always a way.
And I'll leave that knowing, waha, waha, waha.
Indeed. But we've had lots of stories of lots and things being sold in the App Store and people having good success stories. So good on those developers, because they've probably been ticking along for a little while now, and this has been the kick that they needed.
The one that really amazed me was Evernote. I couldn't believe this. Evernote, to me, are well established now, and they're always attracting new users. But the rate of new users on the Mac was 1,800% higher than normal.
Which is incredible, but I think it's because it's a free application.
Yeah, but it's always been a free application.
Yeah, but it's people just looking for things to download.
But it's the actual, if you look at the, I mean they blogged about it in day one, they blogged about it a few days later, and they are amazed at the difference it's made. And there was a new blog post tonight just saying it's changed how they are going to approach development. Because they've obviously seen the traction they're getting from the Mac App Store.
It's clever stuff. My only gripe with the App Store, was that I found everything a bit small.
For the resolution,
and there's no way you can zoom in. You can't pinch zoom.
The app itself is pretty poor. Also, what I don't like is it automatically goes to the dock. I hate an application automatically going to the dock.
Yes, you want a choice to put it there or not. Yeah,
and then for the uninitiated, if I remove it from the dock, is that me uninstalling?
Yes, but I did like the little the animation that took it down there. I thought that was clever. The tie in between the two, you know, the mobile that we're used to. So I thought that's clever.
Mm. And there was also some fear around piracy. I think there was some duff stories that the app store's already been cracked, and you know you can easily download Angry Birds and pirate it.
Which you could,
because the developer hadn't actually followed the security guidelines properly.
Yes, it's all about how they'd you could put any security certificate inside the application, and it'd work. So you could pretty much download any application you wanted, rip out its security certificate, and put it in Angry Birds, and Angry Birds would then think it had been purchased legitimately.
Yes.
But it wasn't really very straightforward. You had to follow a sort of four-step process.
Yes. Oh, no, absolutely.
So, but an oversight by the developer, but yes, not cracked like we were led to imagine.
Yeah, and I think that the other confusion is if you've bought software out with the App Store, you won't get updates via the App Store. You still have to update that software manually yourself.
All right, so it's not going to be like the phone environment where we keep getting released software updates.
Right. Well, if you buy it through the App Store, yes. So I've bought, let's look down at the dock. What have I got? Transmit. I've bought Transmit from Panic. It's available in the App Store. The App Store actually thinks I've got it installed, but I won't get any updates.
Right, okay.
And there's a link in the show notes to a website called If I Bought Your App Already, Can I Update It Through the MacAppStore.com?
All right.
And that tells you everything you need to know.
That's a handy URL.
Well, if you click on the link, you'll see why. Because it tells you everything you need to know about that.
Very good.
One other thing that is horrid, there's no betas or demos or trials.
It's all or nothing, basically.
Yeah, so you're still relying on the developer themselves, like, you know, at their own website hosting a demo or trial version. And I think people are still going to do that.
It's early days that we might see that comes along and runs. I guess Apple don't want to be responsible for paying for everyone's downloads of trials and demos without money.
No.
Okay, let's move on a bit. So big announcement after CES, really. Was Verizon are going to have the iPhone in America. Not a very UK-centric story, but it's been rumoured for ages, and that is going to happen. But I think the story is just that the upgrades that are going to kind of happen.
Yes. There's a feature on it called Personal Hotspot, which was mentioned during the actual the launch in New York. That we're going to have personal hotspots, pricing will come later, all support. So basically your iPhone can turn into a mobile hotspot, and then file their devices can connect online, basically, through it.
And use up your 500 megabytes.
Something that a lot of Android phones can do out of the box. Something that you need to jailbreak your iPhone to do up until now. I think that's now been confirmed today that there'll be a 4.3 update in March, which will seemingly bring this to all iPhone users. However, it's up to carriers as to how or if they want to support that feature.
Yeah, Verizon sort of touting that as a feature for the Verizon iPhone, but actually it looks now like it will be coming to all, potentially all iPhones, but carriers in the US are probably unlikely to do it.
Well, AT&T have already said we're investigating.
But they were investigating tethering and they'd done that for the 5 years now. Something stupid.
Yeah, I think tethering eventually came out and it was massively priced. So.
Yeah, so it just wasn't worth it. But also the Verizon phone has a new antenna design. So there you go. They have wanted to fix that somewhere along the way.
Well, they've changed the breakpoints.
Yes, they've got more breakpoints. So I think it divides down antenna into more points.
What's interesting is see the one on the left-hand side that you could bridge with your thumb?
Mm-hmm.
That's been moved up to above the volume buttons.
Makes sense.
And what they're saying is the death grip no longer works.
So there you go. Good, simple solution, easy solution. And they've probably been wanting to do that for a while. So there you go. Okay, another story that's burbled itself away. And it was sort of Google made an announcement that it was no longer going to support H.264 video in its Chrome browser, citing the reason that it's not an open codec for video, and therefore they don't want to sort of help it to move along. They're going to get behind their own for handily. Is it WebM?
But Google's not evil. I mean, so surely this can't be true.
But yes, they are. They're citing reasons of openness, but as plenty of people have pointed out, Google comes packaged with Flash.
This to me exposes all this. See all this nonsense about Apple's evil and all this and Microsoft are evil and Google's not. And look at all these great things that they do for us, like Google Goggles, and we send up Android devices to space and provide all these great tools for free. I think this just shows you they're a company, they're in for profit. And they're going to do things that are going to suck.
This is Google and Adobe, though, getting their own back at Apple as much as anything, probably. But also, we don't know that they are going to keep Flash support. Maybe that'll disappear soon anyway.
No chance.
I don't think there's any chance, but you never know. But also,
I'm waiting for MP3 to be dropped as well. Because surely, MP3 is not an open standard.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's an easy snipe to make anyway. I mean, it does seem like a strange move, but H.264, the owners of that codec, and I can't remember the name offhand, have never said that the codec is not going to be charged for one day. And if they become omnipresent, then they could become omnipowerful.
No, but the vast majority of video on the web is H.264, either direct in its own format or with a Flash wrap around it.
And I think that's probably what Google are trying to do, is to move away from that scenario where it is all H.264. And okay, it's moving to their own platform, but at least that has, external influence being an open codec. I agree that there's double standards here, but people can moan all they want and say, oh, cool, take Flash off. But they're able to and allowed to remove that feature if they want.
As Apple fanboy in charge, John Gruber, said yesterday, I don't see how Google keeps Flash but drops H.264 in the name of openness without being seen as utter hypocrites.
Yeah, but then...
And I don't see how they can answer it. And nobody from Google is answering it. They've put up their blog post, everybody's commenting on it and saying, that's terrible. And there's nothing.
But it was pretty terrible when they said Apple said they weren't going to support Flash and pretty much destroyed.
I'm not trying to turn this into they are better or they are worse.
I think there is a bit of tit for tat.
Oh no, there is.
It's a bit hypocritical. But we don't know the direction, and I still prefer that direction.
Yep, Apple have never turned around and said they're not evil or we're not this or we're not that. They're going down it. They've got an agenda. They're following it. and everybody knows it. It's just,
well, they go, and now Google are following an agenda, and maybe. Probably a more long-term safe agenda than, say, locking ourselves into H.264, which, so the company, the company that owns it have said, we'll never charge a consumer for it, but they haven't said that any commercial purposes will be not come under a license one day.
No, to me, this is all about Google. That they're making it very difficult for companies, businesses to understand what to do with codecs now. Probably the easiest solution, just host it on YouTube and we'll take care of it for you.
Yes.
And it also just stops the, and in some ways it also stops the kind of HTML5. I really do think it's a bit of a kick in the ghoulies.
Yes, H.264 was quite important to that. But then again, say this WebM, maybe it will be picked up now if it becomes the de facto norm. And there's something just a little bit more comfortable about it sitting open for people to develop. You know, adding features into videos, for example, embedding inline videos going forward. With the closed codec, there's no saying those features are going to be made available.
Absolutely. So when Chrome stops supporting Flash, well done, Google.
But they're not going to do that for a bit.
To support that open codec, if they really wanted to do that, they should have dropped Flash now.
Basically, their statement should have said, we are dropping H.264 because we've got an alternative here that's open and we want to use that instead.
Anyway, Google are evil. Don't believe the hype.
Yeah, but they send androids into space.
Oh, and Google goggles is the best thing ever this week.
And finally, our final story today is Microsoft moaning and bitching to the to the trademark commission, saying, "Oh, don't let Apple have App Store. It's really causing us some problems." Because Apple have applied for App Store to be trademarked, which is patent. Well, I guess it's pending. And Microsoft are moaning about it.
I love the Guardian headline, which was "Why Apple shouldn't be allowed to trademark App Store." By the folk who trademarked Windows.
Yeah.
Which just sums it up.
I was all on Microsoft's side saying, yeah, it's a bit bloody ridiculous. I hate all this trademarking.
But it's like trademarking of things like, you know, one-click purchase.
Yes, it's just so annoying.
Yeah.
I trademarked a sneeze. But when you kind of nudge me and say, yeah, Microsoft trademarked Windows. That kind of brings it all home, and so they've you use App Store, Apple, ahead.
See the whole trademark patent business joke.
It's joke. Becoming ridiculous, unbelievable, and not helping anyone. Saying definitely not helping the people.
I'm actually torn because I Apple shouldn't be allowed to be the only people to have an App Store. It's ridiculous. But at the same time, it'd be one in the face to somebody like Microsoft who thinks they can just object when they've already got Windows.
Yeah. So you can't argue it when you say that.
No. <It's>, hey-ho.
But it is awkward, everyone else having to not call their thing an App Store.
Mm, definitely.
Even though we all do call it an App Store.
The only thing is, certainly when I say App Store to my colleagues' friends, I think they all know I'm talking Apple.
But I think...
What's it called on an Android device? Is it an App Store?
I'm not sure what it's called on an Android device, actually.
Oh, is it an Android Store or something?
See, we all call it the App Store, whatever. Anywho. Right, so that's our news stories today. It has been a long one. Let's go for some picks. I'm going to quickly do my pick first, and I will keep it quick. I've been talking about it for a little while, but I bought a Logitech webcam, the HD Pro C910. Probably the Ferrari of webcams out there at the moment. Basically, it's a high definition video camera and can take full HD video and can take 10 megapixel stills. It's got stereo sound, and basically it can support all your HD video conferencing. So Skype HD, the new service by Skype, can use that if you have the connection to use it. But I guess most people aren't going to have the connection to use it. I think you need about a 1 meg upload, and I certainly don't have a 1 meg upload.
Really?
But the improved optics, the good optics that it's got, does make a difference even for your kind of standard definition. And if you happen to want to take video locally, then you can do that in high def, which is good. Offers the ability to upload to YouTube, Facebook direct if you want to. Comes with some video editing software, which is basic but does its job. You can do stupid things like video effects and add avatars to replace your own face.
You say stupid, but when you turned them on, I was actually really quite impressed with some of them.
They're incredibly impressive. Yeah. I don't know when you'd ever use them. But you can turn yourself into a fully moving shark.
Oh, you can.
And it facial tracks your features, so it'll actually translate them onto...
The piece of cheese was quite impressive.
I made that myself.
No, you never.
Genuinely, you can make your own, and I made it out of cheese. Yep, genuinely.
Very good.
So it's very clever. But anyway, it's got an incredible facial tracking, which is how it does it in expression tracking as well. So that's how it makes your avatars talk. It's also got a very good motion detection bit of software in it. So if you want to point it somewhere in your house or down at your front door, you can actually use it as a bit of a security device. So it's good. It is expensive though. I think when I bought it, it was probably around 80 quid, and now the cheapest I've seen it so far is 70. I think it's going to come down in the next month or so to less than that, but it's still 70 quid for a webcam, which is pretty ridiculous really. But it's a great bit of kit.
Yeah, but bear in mind, you're actually getting an HD video.
It's amazing, and it auto focuses. It does a really good job in different lighting conditions. So, you know, it really is a good bit of kit, but it does cost. You have to pay for that kind of stuff. That was my pick.
Oh, and one little point was that you didn't know this, but last week the Logitech announced it also now comes with Mac drivers. So up until last week, it was a Windows only product.
And there you go.
And it's now for both. And I'm actually quite tempted.
Even if you had to record something, if you were recording little ditties for YouTube, we see a lot of people recording their gadgets and shoving them up there, or you know, just doing. It would even be suitable for us doing digital outbox little video ditties of reviews and things. It's that kind of high quality. You don't need any more than that.
One click purchase.
Yeah, the dangers of. I think in the next month you'll see it coming down, because Amazon have actually got it listed as something like 56 quid, but not available for the next couple of months. So,
okay.
Might be worth keeping an eye on that.
Hokey-dokey.
So anyway, that is my pick. What is yours, Ian?
As you've already known, it's a brand new year. And with brand new years usually come the usual resolutions.
Let me think. Diets, alcohol, cigarettes.
Something I've been looking to do this year is track a few more things, just like, you know, exercise wise and dietary wise. And this was recommended by one of the bloggers I follow, Gordon, last year. And it was all about tracking food. So it was tracking calorie intake and also certain types of food. And he'd recommended a website called MyFitnessPal, which I must admit, the snob in me was like, I ain't using that. What a terrible name. At Christmas, I downloaded it and installed it. And you can use an iPhone app or you can use a website. And it's excellent. It allows you to track food, exercise, weight. There's got a social networking part to it, so you can add in friends, which I'm not too comfortable at, to be honest. I don't want people knowing what I'm eating.
Stop gawking at my waistline.
Yeah, it's bad enough having to wait up on Twitter. to have Shaquille in particular saying the next day at work, you had three cakes, would just be a bit too much. But what I really like about it is that the whole point of tracking food just sounded like it would be hard work, you know, capturing the calories and capturing what's in it. But it's actually got a really, really rich database. And it's the other ones I've tried were all very American focused, but this has got a great UK database. So you can usually find the food that you're eating very easily. Somebody's already entered it. And if it's not, you can add it in yourself. And it also remembers what you've eaten. So if you generally eat the same thing for breakfast, it's dead easy just to add that in every day. So I just find, you know, 2 minutes before I go to sleep at night, I can just add in my day's intake. I am very impressed.
I watched an interesting Horizon. I don't know why this is a bit off the rails, I guess. Which said that fat people tend to under-record their food by 50%. So just keep that in mind.
Thankfully, I'm not fat. Hence, mine's incredibly accurate.
I was thinking more of myself.
No, it's... It's one of these things. It's once you start thinking it through, and you can do all the big things, and you're like, oh, I had 3 celebrations. Yeah. Should I really count that?
I'll just leave them off. Be fine. I'll forget that oozing sauce I put over the top. Yeah.
So I'm actually, the app itself, really simple to use, really, really nice app, and it's all free. So for a free tool, I think it's excellent.
Ignore
so
the domain name, myfitnesspal.com.
Yes.
So if you can get past the domain name, on you go. Good stuff. And that is us for the first episode of this year.
Longer and better.
Yeah, it's been a bit long, but we had a lot to get through, and it has been a while, so we hope you allow us this long one. you can find out more about our long ones at digitaloutbox.com. You can email us info@digitaloutbox.com, and we are on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, and Ian, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter as Shweeper, and my blog is iand.net, and hopefully in the new year, this year, we'll have some updates to our website.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Chris and Henry don't know about yet. But
no, you've been very secretive.
I have.
Probably for good reason.
just you wait.
Yeah, we're hoping to keep our website much more fresh and up to date with the reviews and things we talk about in our podcast.
Yeah, but work gets in the way. You know, seeing you're doing a day job, it's difficult. And Halo Reach gets in the way.
yeah, that's... Yes, that's a good point.
Let's not track how much we game.
No, let's not record that. We'll unrecord that by 50%, I tell you. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
I was so tempted when you're doing your Logitech review to say that, did it cause your blue screen of death?
Probably.
And then I was like, is that just me being petty? Is that just me being a bitch and saying, you're on Windows?
I can't believe it has actually happened twice today. So I am going to have to give my computer a good clean out. I'll tell you, they probably heard us talking about Microsoft at the beginning. They've got some sort
was just a monitoring. I just thought it was ironic that we just started talking about Skype and your picture froze. And it was like, oof. that's sod's law.
Off I went.
We've only really had one, I think we had one or two podcasts where we had issues with Skype. And apart from that, it's been very, very, very reliable.
I was going to say, Skype, since I've been doing it, I don't think has popped off. I think Henry popped out once, didn't he?
And I think one night mine's was all messed up. Remember there was one night we kept on dropping?
Yes, that was a bit frustrating. But yes, it's been very good. So Skype, good. Microsoft Windows blue screen fail. Anyway, I better clean it.